I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barber shop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, author and editor Keith Boykin, and NPR's political editor Ken Rudin. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. What's good?
Hey.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Don't ask Ken.
Thanks, everybody. Well, listen. There were two people. The biggest representatives in the land were on Capitol Hill Tuesday talking about don't ask, don't tell. We've been talking about it a lot ever since Barack Obama mentioned it.
I think it was very interesting testimony for people who saw it. Of course, Defense Secretary Robert Gates said, in essence, I'm following the lead of my commander-in-chief. As Jimmy pointed out, Barack Obama said at the State of the Union, he's committed to repealing the policy and working with Congress. But Admiral Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, now he's the top-ranking military officer, uniformed officer, went even further when he told lawmakers that he personally believes that the policy is wrong.
Speaking for myself and myself only, it is my personal belief that allowing gays and lesbians to serve openly would be the right thing to do. No matter how I look at this issue, I cannot escape being troubled by the fact that we have in place a policy which forces young men and women to lie about who they are in order to defend their fellow citizens.
So there you go, Jimmy.
Wow. Ken, how do you read that, man?
Well,
I mean, is it really the right time?
Well, some people will say that it's well beyond the right time, far overdue. Now, the problem is it's not don't ask, don't tell. It's don't ask me to vote, because ultimately it'll be Congress who will decide how to deal with this policy, whether to change this policy. And in an era where there seems to be a conservative backlash, or at least a Tea Party backlash, you've got to see that if members of Congress are too afraid to put their careers on the line, which could be for a very controversial vote.
Let me just play another clip for you, just so you have that here. And I'm not by playing this implying that John McCain and Saxby Chambliss of Georgia, the senators, Republican senators, are taking this position out of political fear, because I'm not in a position to assess that. But I'm just going to tell you what they said. Here it is.
The essence of military capability is good order and unit cohesion, and that any practice which puts those goals at unacceptable risk can be restricted.
The presence in the armed forces of persons who demonstrate a propensity or intent to engage in homosexual acts would very likely create an unacceptable risk to those high standards of morale, good order and discipline, and effective unit cohesion and effectiveness.
Now, again, forgive me, guys, old school. You know, we've been trying to figure out whether that's the sentiment of the rank and file now, because these gentlemen served a long time ago. So I don't know. But I'm interested to hear Keith's point on this. Keith, you were an advisor to President Clinton when the policy was introduced in 1993. You were at the time the highest ranking openly gay official in the Clinton White House at the time that the don't ask, don't tell was implemented. So this must be kind of, I don't know, what's the word, deja vu all over again for you.
It is. It's old news, Michelle. I mean, this story has been going on since 1993 when President Clinton tried to do this. I can't believe we're still having this conversation. What John McCain said is frankly hypocritical, because just a few years ago, 4 years ago, right, when he was asked about don't ask, don't tell, he said, if the leadership of the Senate, of the military, comes to me and says we need to change the policy, he'll change the policy. Right. He'll go along with it. And what happens? The leadership of the military comes along and says, let's change the policy. And John McCain says, oh, we don't really need to change it. You know, it's a part of the hypocrisy in politics. And I think it's similar to what Saxby Chambliss was saying earlier, the whole idea that we have to worry about unit cohesion because the gay people can't serve in the military. The reality is they're already there. There are gays and lesbians all throughout the military. Everybody knows that. And even General Powell knew that. And Admiral Mullen knows that. So the idea that these two old white guys who are totally out of touch, have no clue about what's going on, and want to use that as an excuse for stopping justice in America just doesn't seem to hold water.
Well, just to clarify again, John McCain, of course, is, you know, I think by all accounts, a revered war hero. I mean, here's a POW for 5 years and you know, went to the Naval Academy. Of course, Saxby Chambliss never served in uniform. So, which I don't know if that's the whole, you know, civilian control of the military is a core principle of, you know, American life. But Saxby Chambliss really doesn't have any direct experience in terms of being in the uniform. Arsalan, you wanted to say?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Keith really hit the nail on the head right there. You know, I think that, you know, when we talk about integration of the armed forces, you know, the whole troop morale, unit cohesion thing was the same thing that was used against African Americans until President Harry Truman signed Executive Order 9981 in July of 1948, calling for the integration of the U.S. military. You know, I think it's absolutely unconscionable that gay and lesbian soldiers have to lie about themselves in order to sacrifice their own lives for their country. And, you know, you want to talk about morale problem and unit cohesion? How about, you know, the rape and sexual assault of female American soldiers, which some studies have shown, you know, from 30% to 70% of women in the military have been sexually assaulted or raped at some point by their own service members. And so, you know, Keith was absolutely right. John McCain in 2006 went on TV and said, you know, if our military leaders, you know, call for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, then I will support that. Now that Admiral Mike Mullen and Defense Secretary Robert Gates has come out, you know, McCain is now flip-flopped. And so, you know,
and General Powell.
Right. And so, you know, the same sort
of... Well, just to clarify, Keith is right. I think Colin Powell, when he was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said that supported Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He has now publicly said that he thinks it's time to change the policy.
Right. And, you know, using that same logic, you know, about, you know, morale or unit cohesion, you know, the same could be said about, you know, old people serving in the Senate. We know that John McCain's like 342 years old, and we can say that, you know, the morale of the Senate is, you know, lowered when people are serving.
I think our morale is being lowered by these shots at people's demographic. Come on, Arsalan. Don't become the thing you hate. What's that study? Well, let me just ask you, what's that study you were talking about that describes the extent of sexual abuse directed at women, and that can take a variety of forms.
Absolutely,
as we know,
and there's a wide range. There are several studies that have been done, and that's why the range has been anywhere from 30% to 70%. Some studies have shown 30%.
We'll see if we can find it, and we'll find a link, and we'll put it on our site if we can. Keith, final thought on that?
Michelle, the reason why age is relevant is because younger troops don't care about this. It's the older guys who are still caught in the past about this issue. And I think this is an issue where the Democrats really need to lead, along with the health care issue. This is an example where the party of the left has to stand for something if it wants people to vote for them. I remember sitting in a meeting with President Clinton in 1993, where it was the first meeting ever had with the gay and lesbian leaders in the country, the first time any president ever met with them, actually. And he predicted in 1993, in the first year of his administration, he'd be known for two things. He said, one, for universal health care, and two, for changing or lifting the ban on gays in the military. Hmm. Neither one of those things happened. And now here we are some 17 years later. We're still talking about these issues, and Democrats are still afraid and still timid to do the right thing. It's just unacceptable.
Can I just add one quick thing? I agree with everything that Keith is saying, and I think that age is a factor in who supports it, who not. But the fact that McCain and Chambliss are white, I think that has nothing to do with it. So if we're talking about who supports what, I don't think race is... plays a role in this debate anyway.
Yeah, I don't know what plays a role in it, because frankly, Mike Mullen has been in the military his entire life and his entire adult career, and so he's an old white guy too who says that it's time to change the policy. So I don't know. One of the things I'm struck by is that, you know, we've tried to find various ways to measure the sentiment of the rank and file troops on this using whatever means we have available, you know, Facebook and social media and all these other things. Very hard to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people say this because they're afraid to speak out, but others might say it's just because it's ho-hum to them. It's not a big issue. It's just, right. I would be really interested. The military says that they're going to study this, and they say they are going to assess the sentiments of the troops, service members. Mm-hmm. I'd be interested. Jimmy, final thought?
Michelle, at the end of the day, it just comes down to the fact that nobody likes change, you know, and there's going to be a period when this is repealed, when a period of discomfort. But after that, it'll just be really pedestrian, and we'll get over it.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop, and we're joined by Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Keith Boykin, and Ken Rudin. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Well, it's an election year, and the scandal is already brewing in Illinois. Now, Democrat Scott Lee Cohen, who is running for lieutenant governor, is refusing to step away, even as he's catching heat over his arrest in 2005 for an alleged domestic violence episode with his ex girlfriend. That's no good, Michelle.
How do you spell drama? The Illinois primaries. I mean, how do you spell it? So let's guess. Scott Lee Cohen running on the ticket with the incumbent Governor Pat Quinn, who, of course, you remember, got that seat when Rod Blagojevich went down over this pay-for-play scandal trying to allegedly auction off Barack Obama's seat to the highest bidder. Got that? Now, the Quinn-Cohen ticket won their Democratic primary, apparently on Tuesday, by a very slim margin. Now they are on the ticket for the general election. Cohen's refusing to step down. Let me just play a short clip of how this story is being covered in Chicago. Here it is.
Court records show a violent fight where Cohen put a knife to the woman's throat and pushed her head against the wall. Chicago police also noted seeing, quote, minor knife wound abrasions on the woman's neck and defense wounds on her hands from when Cohen swung the knife at her. Cohen's former girlfriend was arrested for prostitution 6 months before the incident. Cohen claims he didn't know and thought she was a massage therapist.
Now, that's from Joe. I'm not sure I needed to know all of that. That's more than I really felt I needed to know about this. That will do it.
Thanks for that, Michelle. Wow. Ken, what's in the water up in Illinois? What's going on with the politics up there,
well,
man?
If the Democrat, after Rod Blagojevich and, of course, the illustrious Senate career of Roland Burris didn't dissuade them enough, I mean, this is the last thing the Democrats wanted. It's not Pat Quinn's fault that Democrats nominated Scott Lee Cohen, but the point is, Cohen spent $2 million of his own money. He did say that there was some kind of altercation during the campaign, but not that his girlfriend was a prostitute or that he allegedly put a knife to her neck. And, you know, if you think of all the problems hurting the Democratic Party with the Tea Party protests, with the uncomfortable feelings and the unease about what health care may mean to so many people, the last thing the Democrats needed is something like this. And they also nominated a guy named Alexei Janulius for the Senate in Illinois, who has ethics problems regarding his family's bank and ties to Tony Rezko. The last thing the Democrats wanted, and this is the first primary of 2010. Let's see what comes in the next primaries.
Oi.
Well, Arslan's from Chicago. He's trying to hide under the desk.
A-Train. Yeah, man. What's good?
As the resident Chicagoan in the barbershop, you know, Illinois politics has turned into a bad episode of Jersey Shore here. You know, let's not forget that, you know, this is
that's a good episode?
Well, good point. You know, let's not forget in 2004, the Democratic senatorial primary where Barack Obama won, the Democratic frontrunner, Blair Hull, who was actually, you know, picked to win the whole thing, was actually accused of beating his ex-wife. And then obviously Barack became the Democratic nominee, and then the Republican frontrunner Jack Ryan, you know, had his divorce records unsealed about, you know, taking his ex-wife, actress Jerry Ryan, to sex clubs in Chicago, which then led to the Republicans nominating their own version of the Great Black Hope, Alan Keyes, to run against Barack Obama. We all know what happened there. He lost 27% to 70%. You know, so again, Illinois politics has gotten a wee bit absurd.
Why is that?
I don't know. I mean, it's been part and parcel of Illinois politics for decades. I mean, we've had, you know, George Ryan, Blagojevich. We've just had, you know, patently corrupt officials within the Illinois political establishment.
Well, you know what, Michelle?
I don't think it's gotten absurd.
Go ahead, Keith.
Isn't it always been that way? Isn't that kind of the tradition of Illinois politics?
You know what,
Keith? Which produced Abraham Lincoln.
You know what I think?
I'm sorry.
You know
I just
think. I think, you know what? I'm of two minds on this because, you know what? I don't want a woman beater holding office, right?
True.
You know, but I don't think Cohen should quit, and I'm going to tell you why. We live in a society now where too much of what happens behind closed doors has become public fodder. Now, these are all allegations. Now, if all our like domestic foibles were documented for public consumption, I don't know how many of us would be able to hold a job, man or woman. And that's real talk. Now, that said,
isn't that relevant, though? Isn't that relevant to your
these are allegations. They're allegations. Maybe. But so, Keith, you're always on your best behavior in your relationships, really? Seriously?
But Keith is
not a public official.
Okay. But he's not Superman. He doesn't walk on water. I'm not making any excuses for Cohen. Like I said, I don't want a woman beater holding office. By the same token, I don't, you know, these are allegations, and, you know, all this having been said, he should step down for the good of the party.
I thought you just said he shouldn't.
Yeah.
Well, I told you I have two minds of this.
We've heard them both.
He shouldn't really step down. Right. I'm flipping like Kerry in a pancake house, but he shouldn't step down. But for the good of the party, he might have to.
But see, to me, this is another example of the weakness of the Democratic Party. I'm really shocked and surprised. Here we have a president of the United States from Chicago. We have the chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, who's also from the Chicago area. These are two guys who have enormous power, and yet they can't have more control and get some order about what's going on in Illinois politics. It just doesn't seem to make any sense.
But maybe they tried to get
Lisa Madigan, the state attorney general, to run, and she refused to run because she has some young kids and she wants to be governor. So Obama and the Democratic establishment tried to butt in, and they just couldn't get the right candidates, and they're stuck with a lieutenant governor candidate and a Senate candidate who could bring back down the party in November.
Well, I'm sorry, guys, I have to cheer myself. We must talk about the Super Bowl. We must talk about something inspiring. And
finally, the game we've been waiting for. The Super Bowl is Sunday, and the Indianapolis Colts take on the New Orleans Saints down in Miami. Keith, you're down there, son. And what's going on, dude?
I know.
The NFL has officially taken over Miami. I've been here for the past few weeks, but last week with the Pro Bowl, the NFL came. It took over South Beach. They put all these tents and stages everywhere, put a big football-shaped arch over Ocean Drive, hundreds of people just walking down the streets everywhere, all the time. It's incredible. I've never seen anything like this.
This is the one guy who doesn't want to be there right now. Can you give up your spot? Okay, get on a plane right now and leave your spot for somebody who wants to be there.
I'm actually leaving, unfortunately. Going to the snows for some reason.
Oh, boy. Okay, Arsalan, wow. Who's it going to be? Call it.
It's going to be the Colts, 35-31. I mean, Drew Brees, Marcus Colts, and Devery Henderson have had an amazing season. My buddy Mike Stanfield's the VP of the Saints, but Peyton Manning is the Roger Federer of football. And when it comes to his trio of wide receivers, listen, he has Reggie, you know, no relation to John Wayne. He has Austin, my dog's name is Lassie, and yes, she is a collie. And Pierre, I'm a grown man, don't dare call me garçon. They're going to win last two-minute drive, 35-31.
Got all that? Ken, call it.
I love the Saints story. It's a heartwarming story. Listened to Graylin Banks before. It was a great story. But Peyton Manning is spectacular. The only question whether Dyte Freeney, the defensive guy for the Colts, whether he can play well or not. But I think the Colts will win and should win.
Okay. Keith, you want to call it?
I'm predicting the Saints by six. I can't go against the Saints. I have to tell you, I'm really a Jets Giants fan.
That's
so
it. That's it. Right here. That's it, Jimmy. Call it. Who that?
I'm rolling with the Saints. I'm rolling with the Saints. You know, if it's not going to be the Browns, it's got to be the Saints.
It's not going to be the Browns, honey. Let me
not
help you.
Okay. All
right. We'll check in next week and see who's right. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com. He's also a presidential fellow at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. He joined us from WCPN in Cleveland. Keith Boykin is an author and editor of the online news site, The Daily Voice. He was kind enough to join us from member station WLRN in Miami. Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. He joined us from his home office. And Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney, the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com and a legal fellow for the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding. They were both here in our D.C. He was here with me in our D.C. studio. Thank you all so much.
Peace.
Thanks, guys.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.